afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Legal Eagle, Bob Nersessian, whose most recent book is called The Law for Gamblers, A Legal Guide to the Casino Environment. Bob is also in the Blackjack Hall of Fame and is a frequent guest on Gambling with an Edge. Bob Nersessian, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure to be here, and I can't believe you guys keep having me back.
Well, no accounting for taste, I guess. We actually enjoy having you here. We reinforce the ceilings because you do bounce off it a couple times. But chapter 5 of your book, you discuss asset forfeiture, where sometimes a police seize money which they claim has been used or is about to be used in a crime. This money goes to some agency chosen by the police. So, as you say in your book, quote, from first contact, the seizing official has an incentive to dissemble, exaggerate, lie in order to keep the funds, unquote. With that as prologue, the state of Oklahoma has introduced a new wrinkle in asset forfeiture. Although this procedure may currently be on hold, the technique involves using a special device to scan debit cards and some credit cards and some gift cards to see if there's any money on them. If there is, and the police wish to claim that the money is to be used for drugs or some other illicit activity, that money may be taken by the police on the spot. The company who developed this handheld device gets 7% of whatever is confiscated and successfully kept. A friend of mine, who lives in Las Vegas, has some Chevron gift cards that he earned from casinos, and he was planning to give to his sister for Christmas. His sister lives in Oklahoma, and he's going to be driving there. He wonders if these Chevron gift cards are liable to be confiscated by the police if he happens to be stopped. Bob Nersessian, any comment?
The comment would be, sure. They'll take your car. They'll take anything they can get their hands on. They will just outright steal it. And I've been involved with that 3 times now. If they have a way, they're going to destroy your money and put it in their pocket. I mean, our government has created a system of modern highwaymen, and curiously, they wear badges in blue. With that said, should she not drive? Well, no, of course she should drive. Should she not carry a stack of Chevron cards? Probably not.
Mail them to her. It's actually a guy, but he should mail them to his sister and said, don't open this until I get there.
Oh, I thought she was going to be driving in Oklahoma.
No, actually, my friend's a guy who's going to be giving the cards to his sister who lives in Oklahoma for Christmas.
So just take one at a time.
He wants to drive there to give her the cards?
Well, it's our family Christmas something.
Yeah.
And that's going to be his present to her.
Well, mailing them there means that if he mails them to a remote address, it's not going to be a surprise. It'll be a surprise, but he still has to drive to the house. And if he mails them to the house, she's not going to be surprised on Christmas morning because she's going to have her nice little cards. And don't necessarily think that the mail prevents it from being taken either. So, just take them over there and keep your fingers crossed. No, I have no panacea to prevent this. One case in my office recently involved a gambler driving through northern Nevada who I've heard the tapes behind it and stuff like that. And there is actually 3 police on the line arguing about whether or not to take the money, with pretty much all agreeing that they have no evidence and the guy says he's a professional gambler. Thank God the more reasoned approach overtook the other officer's argument. And they, if I remember right, they even got a DA on the line. And the DA said, let him go. But this is in the area where at the time they had just been caught and were on the front page of taking other professional gamblers' monies. I don't know if you remember that in the articles and stuff. And they were getting some really bad press. I'm sure as time passes, as it did with the federal government step back on the seizure laws, now they're back in. You know, things get hot. They slow down. People are complacent. They'll get hot again. So
you mentioned you had three cases like this. Were you able to get the money back in all three cases?
Two of them. One of them is Fiore versus Walden, the Supreme Court decision. Or Walden versus Fiore. That was...
Is that still going on?
No, that's long done. It was the actual civil action against the seizing agent was going forward per the Ninth Circuit, and the Supreme Court reversed, but only on technical jurisdictional grounds. There was never a decision as to whether or not what he did was a violation of civil rights, but certainly the U.S. attorney, when she looked at it and gave me back the money and let me know that she told the agent, "You are the drug police. You are not the gaming police." There was, at least from my perspective, implicitly a recognition that it was an entirely wrongful seizure and the money was all given back. It took a lot of work.
And you don't work for free, for sure.
Oh, no, I don't. And then there's, you know, yeah. Another one was a Chinese national who was gambling here and had six figures seized, and I got all of her money back. And since I lost the third one, I don't want to talk about it.
But the one that you lost, I mean, I know you don't want to talk about it, but how did they justify not giving the money back? Were there extenuating circumstances of some sort that...
Yes. But
we can move on.
No, hold on. Let me see if there's a way that I can talk about this, because some of that is still ongoing.
I'm just trying to figure out, like, what to avoid. The person who didn't get their money back, what do we do to make sure that we're not one of that, you know, that falls onto that
first,
side?
First, you better get a lawyer, because the rules are very complex and very technical about what you have to do and when you have to do it. For example, there's a rule out there that you have to file a paper under penalty of perjury. Okay? Now, the general law is a government document filed under oath is punishable by perjury. So that would be a document filed under penalty of perjury. Yet, a couple of circuit court of appeals in the United States system said a notary, even with the possibility of prosecution under perjury, is not a document filed under penalty of perjury. A document filed under penalty of perjury must include the magic words, quote, "I file this document under penalty of perjury," close quote. Which, yeah, Richard just looked at me with a funky look, and I'll tell you, when I read those cases, it was like, don't you guys understand what perjury is? Wait a minute, for God's sakes, you're the Federal Court of Appeals. Of course you know what perjury is. And filing a government document notarized in an official proceeding is under penalty of perjury. I don't get it, but that's the way the law works sometimes. I could give you a dozen other examples where the statute says X, the court says, well, X meant Y.
Let's move on.
Did I bounce off the ceiling enough for you?
Not yet. We're hoping. This next one has a potential. In a recent situation in Missouri, a man and wife discovered a glitch in the player tracking system and were able to download money from the slot club that was not theirs. They did this some 4,000 separate times and were able to extract some $300,000. Okay. First of all, I'm assuming this would strike you as a case that you personally wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Now, second.
Maybe they thought that was the game. like you push these buttons and money comes out, that's the way the game is played.
Maybe they thought that. Second, since the players didn't actively do anything to create this glitch, in your opinions, are their actions possibly legally defensible?
Okay. As with anything where we're sitting across this table and you raise that question, what do you think the answer is? It is, it depends.
Okay.
And the reason it depends is it depends on the state you're in. That type of activity would fall under the ATM spitting out money circumstances, which predates the players' cards and all of this and goes back, I think, as early as the 70s for the first time that happened. And there were some cases where the state attempted to certain states attempted to prosecute the person who walked away with the money, and the cases came down both ways. It's found money or it's stolen money. But in response to the ATM situation, most states, and it may even be all states, passed statutes that make it a crime to take the money in an analogous situation. And in that circumstance, if you are paid money, which anybody would know, if you receive money as a purported payment, which any reasonable person would know was not due and was not, and to which you were not entitled, and you keep it, that's now a crime by a statute, by recent statutes. So the first, it depends, is whether or not what you raise occurred in a state that has such a statute. Nevada has such a statute.
Uh-huh.
So here, yes, that sounds like a crime to me.
Even though it was free play and not cash.
It wasn't cash. It was free play. They had to gamble it through the machine at least once.
Well, here I go with my opinion on something that has not been tested. Free play has value.
Yes, it does.
Okay, well, that's really what you have to show. Okay, and that value is monetary. All right?
Yes.
And we all know from the math that we can even figure out the EV on that, and et cetera, et cetera. And then ascribe a value to it. Now, curiously, some courts have said, and this raises the it depends situation again, some courts have said probability and statistics is not a question for the law. Yeah, it's weird. Actually, where they said it, though, it makes a lot of sense. It's a case about a yellow Camaro that was seen driving away from a party store that was just robbed, and they were able to identify the year. So they worked out the year and the car. They had no other evidence, and they looked at the entire database for the state of yellow Camaros matching that year, and it turned out that there was essentially a 1 in 3,000 or a 2,999 out of 3,000 chance that the one guy who lived a mile and a half from the party store, that it was his car.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, for the rest of you, I said party store. Where I'm from in Michigan, that's the name for a convenience store. Okay.
Liquor store.
Oftentimes, but no, more like a 7-Eleven where they may not have liquor. A convenience store. So the court said, no, you can't convict somebody on purely statistical evidence and nothing else. That can be extrapolated into other areas, and that case has been followed a lot for that type of reasoning. So the idea that, yeah, I'm going to get 97 cents back on each dollar I play on this free play over whatever length of time it is, has not gotten currency in the courts as a proper format without exception. Some courts do accept. Like I said, and again, it depends.
All right. Still hasn't touched the ceiling. We'll try something else.
Oh, that wasn't going to make me mad, but on that, the people who are doing it really think that it's not theft. Well, I understand.
They think nobody's going to notice you downloaded 3,000 times or 4,000 times.
Yeah. I mean, the insane part is, were they playing on players' cards that were their own names? Never mind. I don't want to go there.
Moving on. In 2009, a player was using his cell phone as a camera in the Cannery Casino in Las Vegas. I'm using the player's blog as my source of information about this, which may or may not depict the situation accurately. Anyway, the casino told him he couldn't take pictures in the casino, and he put the iPhone away. Anyway, instead of leaving, the player kept talking to the casino security officer, asking him why he couldn't take pictures, what rule said he couldn't. Eventually, he irritated the casino employees enough that the police were called in, and he was officially trespassed from the property. My question, is taking pictures in casinos illegal?
My answer, no.
In this case, it's clear that the player helped to escalate the situation. Assuming the player was willing to leave the casino, how should he have handled this?
I think I've seen this blog, and it's not... As I understood it, the casino escalated the situation by demanding why he was taking the pictures and asking them to delete them. And this guy actually, correct me if I'm wrong, he runs a blog that talks about the interior design, if you will, of casinos.
Right. Yeah, my impression was he would take pictures of things and say, where am I? What casino am I in?
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, it had nothing to do with...
And so that was part of the escalation. But in any event, there's no law against taking pictures in a casino. There used to be casinos that had house rules against it, but there used to be casinos that had house rules about cameras in gaming areas, et cetera, et cetera. And with the ubiquitous cell phone today, I think they've thrown up their hands and said, what can we do? You know, how many Snapchats are taken of the guy holding up his winning ticket in the sports book? And that was the big one historically. No, you can't take a picture in here. Our odds board is behind you, and the people in New York are going to get a better line and middle it, or, you know, rush on it. And no, you're not supposed to be doing that. Well, I think everybody's given up on that. And like you said, I think that was 2009.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that that's all gone by the wayside at this point. And that was a circumstance of the times as much as anything. And it was transitional from ubiquitous, from cameras not being allowed to cameras being not unallowable.
So they don't, I mean, if you do get stopped by security or whatever, they don't have the right to force you to delete the picture.
Oh, God, no. Why would they have that right?
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, they can ask you to leave, but, but yeah.
And if you do escalate the situation under the current circumstances in Nevada, and it doesn't appear that it's going to change at all, at least if you're in a gaming area, they can put you out for any or no reason. And, the no reason one is really sort of spooky because that just gives some bozo security guard the ability to say, you know what, that's the guy who dated my cousin and dumped her, and I'm not liking him, so I'm throwing him out of here forever. And then they go the next step and say, in fact, I'm throwing him out of not only here, but every affiliated casino. And next thing you know, you can't go to Caesar's... or to Harrah's Rincon in California, or the MGM in Detroit because some crazy security guard got a bug up his butt.
Okay.
Close to the ceiling?
Closer. This one, it doesn't have the likelihood to make you bounce.
I'm not bouncing. All right. Have I ever smiled this much?
Yeah, he's smiling a lot.
Yeah.
I think he started
But
drinking
I thought we
already.
Were going to push my book. Hey, everybody, buy my book.
We actually
you should buy his book. It's a good book.
What I really want is some feedback on it. I know that the sales are going gangbusters.
Okay.
But I'm a creature of compliments and affirmation, and I'm not getting nearly enough. So if you did buy it, please, and you liked it, put a review out there. If you didn't like it, pretend you didn't put a review out there.
Okay, good. Did you want them to send you an email telling them how much they liked it? And would you like to give out your email address for that purpose?
Oh, my email address is no secret, but please, it's also my business email address. It's vegaslegal@AOL.com. So don't inundate Rachel. She's my secretary, and she already has enough reasons to hate me.
Okay. Different subject. Station Casinos recently changed their name to Red Rock Resorts.
Changes nothing.
If somebody was previously trespassed by Sunset Station Casino, does the name change avoid the trespass?
Well, first of all, Station's Casinos, I believe each of their properties is separately owned by a different and run by a different corporation, and Red Rock FKA, formerly known as Stations, would be a holding company. The trespass law, NRS 207.200, says that for a trespass to be valid, the warning has to be given by an owner or occupant. Okay? I don't think Red Rock Casinos, Inc., or whatever they changed their name to, owns or occupies Sunset Station, so they can't give a warning. Certainly, and right now this is in front of the Nevada Supreme Court, and it hasn't been decided, but the district court that decided the issue, and it was not my case, said, no, owner or occupant means the owner or occupant, and I believe in that case it was a Caesars property that tried to give a Caesars Entertainment-wide ban for an incident that occurred at one of their casinos, and the district court said, no, that works for that casino. If you tell him he can't go into Harrah's Rincon or another Caesars casino besides the one he was in, that employee works for, this is an example, for Desert Palace, Inc., which is the owner and occupant of Caesars Palace. They don't have the ability to trespass by the district court ruling. Again, it's subject to question in front of the Nevada Supreme Court, but a security person employed by Desert Palace, Inc., also known as Caesars Palace, cannot trespass someone from Harrah's, Flamingo, Harrah's Rincon, I believe Horseshoe, Council Bluffs is Caesars, or any of those others.
Huh. And now you said each of the stations is separately.
That's my understanding.
So they can't globally 86 you from all the stations, only the one you're right in at the time.
I think there are some, for example, I think Orleans and Gold Coast have the same owner who occupies both properties. But I'm pretty sure, don't know for positive, that all the stations' casinos have different corporations owning each separate casino. And I'm pretty sure MGM, has, for example, Mandalay Corp owns Mandalay. Rio Properties owns Rio.
That's a Harrah's.
Oh, that's a Harrah's. Okay. So when you go to Caesars, Rio Properties is the owner of that versus Desert Palace, which is the owner of Caesars Palace versus various other corporate names.
So, and also now Stations is taking over Palms. So if you had an 86ing at the Palms, one station takes it over, you're now good to go back there. Is that right?
No.
No.
If you were 86ed at the Palms?
Yeah.
If it is a stock purchase by Stations or Red Rock, that is still the same corporation. So if you were warned by that corporation, what is Palms' entity?
I think it's called Palms Fiesta.
No, it's not.
All right.
I've sued them a few times. It's not. Okay. But it's very hard to find the owners of these corporations. The easiest way is to go to the Nevada Gaming Control Board, or the owners of the various casinos. The easiest way is to go to the Nevada Gaming Control Board website, pull up publications, go under non-restricted licensees, and they have an ownership history of every non-restricted licensee in Nevada. and you go to the top of that and you find out who the owner is. For example, if you looked at the Caesar's Palace one, you would get there by searching out Caesar's Palace. It pops up. The owner is Desert Palace, Inc. And then it has a list of shareholders and control people and also a history from the first licensure until today of who owned or was involved in. And you can follow that sequentially off of this document. You know, and you look at, I think I'm still talking about Caesars, I'm not positive, but you get names in there that aren't even in town anymore, like Park Place and Starwood, but they're all there.
Huh. You know, that just made me think of a question, and we didn't send you this ahead of time, so I don't mean to throw you for a loop.
Please don't tell the audience I get these ahead of time. I like to be...
Well, let me just throw, because when you talked about the gaming control board, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but are gaming arrest records, is that public information? So if I wanted to go to gaming and say, how many arrests were there last year and, you know, get that information, is that public?
I doubt it. I don't know for sure, but here's a general rule if you want to get something from gaming. Everything they own is privileged. You can't look at anything. You're not allowed to talk to people. And if you do have a question, go research it independently because we're not going to help you.
Wow.
Okay? And I say that with some tongue in cheek, but not entirely. Here's the part. For example, if you have been mistreated by a casino, including theft of money, and you want to make a report of that theft or the or a casino cheating, you make that report. They acknowledge your complaint. They tell you that they're going to investigate it. Okay? Now, it's even your money that's at the casino. All right? Do you want to know what happens because of your complaint?
Of course.
In every venue in the world, are you not entitled to know the results of a public of a complaint that you make to a public policing agency about a person with whom you feel you are a victim?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, not with gaming. You never get to find out the result. And that presents an interesting anomaly, too. I'll give you a current circumstance. I made a complaint against a casino, which I don't know what the result was. But the complaint involved a casino that had 86th someone, while the casino was holding their money, said, no, you have to get out of here. No, you can't have your money. We're not paying you your money. There was no legitimate basis for this dispute other than we hate card counters, okay? And we're not giving you your money. And, oh, yeah, we're keeping your chips, too, that you handed over at the cashier's table. We're just going to keep them. And you get out of here, all right? That complaint was made to the Gaming Control Board. Anecdotal indications of the investigation were the gaming took it very seriously. Did they do anything? No idea. Can't find out. It's private. It is with the Gaming Control Board, and they don't tell anybody except the person against whom the complaint was made. And then only if they find that there's cause for action, because now they'll take action against them. Now, what did I discover because of that? There is a direct incentive to not make a complaint against a casino that acts illegally towards a patron. What is that incentive? If that complaint is made and the Gaming Control Board finds them and finds them guilty and puts their license at risk, the complainant never gets to find out. So there's no benefit if they are guilty. If they aren't guilty, you can bet that that casino will stand up and yell and scream, We were investigated by the Gaming Control Board, and they didn't find anything wrong. In the latter case, so why even do it if the only possible result is if you make a complaint, the casino will either, the result will either be secret or the casino will be exonerated. There's no benefit to making a complaint, and it's a direct incentive against people who are wronged by casinos from complaining against them to the Gaming Control Board. I don't know what got into the head of our legislature when they thought that it was a good idea to allow people to be victimized and then not find out the results of their criminal complaints against the victimizer, but they did it. So everybody write their Nevada congressman and say, and assemblyman and senator, and say, hey, what the hell is this? Because it's just insane.
So did your client get his money back?
Yeah.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. But not through the complaint.
Oh.
All right. So if you're not supposed to complain to gaming, should you complain to the district attorney? What should you do?
Well, then you get into another thing. Discipline against licensees for violation of Gaming Control Board regulations is exclusively with the Gaming Control Board. The Clark County District Attorney has no jurisdiction over it. So if it's a cheating claim, arguably the DA, Mr. Wolfson, couldn't even prosecute a casino for cheating. It is exclusively with the Gaming Control Board.
But if it was something else, like a civil rights violation or something.
Oh, those things, or if they beat up somebody, yes. Casino security guards have been charged with definitely assault and battery. And you might be familiar with the case of, who was that?
Finn and Brown at the Horseshoe.
No, this was at Chad Johnson versus Imperial Palace, and they charged the head of security there with battery on Mr. Johnson. The DA did. And that was the second verdict taken against that same security officer. I understand that today, well, then he was security chief. Previously, he had been an executive security officer at the New Frontier, and a judgment was taken against him there for something very similar. And I think today he's dealing blackjack.
Perfect.
All right. When we had you on the show talking about this book 4 months ago,
what's the name of that book?
The Law for Gamblers.
All right.
You should also buy Beat the Players so that you have the background to read Law for Gamblers. I still get royalties. I'm kidding.
Now, we didn't discuss this chapter on casino credit. Happens to be chapter 7. I personally have lines of credit at several casinos. All up to date, by the way. But hypothetically, let's say I owe $50,000 on one of them, and for whatever reason I decide not to pay. Do I have any defense against not paying that marker?
You live here in Nevada?
I do.
I knew that.
I knew you knew that.
Well, there might be some technical defenses that you could raise concerning the line of credit and the markers that you executed on it, and you don't know until you address the individual circumstances. But generally the answer is a direct no. Our legislature has done another thing here for casinos that is frankly beyond the pale. They have given the local district attorneys the ability to run a collection agency for the casinos, with the threat of criminal prosecution put on top of the of criminal prosecution for walking on a marker. And some of this has just turned bizarre, where you have casinos giving out markers to people who have been drinking too much. Or one I've seen, a whale or somebody who appeared to be a whale being here for repeated visits, and they drop $3 million at one casino. Now, the casino does think that they're a whale, and they are a whale. They just dropped $3 million. Well, their net worth was $2,640,000. Obviously, if they have spent everything they have, they are some sort of gambling addict, because they just went $360,000 over. Okay? They are now destitute. Their wives are divorcing them. They're drinking too much. They lost their job. Their company went down the toilet. And our prosecutor in Nevada is looking at them in New Jersey or from whatever state they flew in on, and they said, we're going to indict you and bring you out here unless you come up with $360,000 next week. And you know what? Doesn't matter that that casino walked away with $3,450,000 or whatever I said a minute ago. Doesn't matter that the casino ran them right into the ground. When the DA says that, they mean it. And they will look to extradite. And they will bring you out. And then, if you go to the next level, it's a check under Nevada law, at least as they've construed it. And therefore, failing to pay a marker, that's the criminal charges that they're bringing, is passing a bad check. And now, that's fraud, so generally not dischargeable in bankruptcy, and you can't even get out of it that way. Although there are some states, and it's discussed in the book, where a bankruptcy can effectively get out of a marker. Depends on where you live again. So much of this depends on where you live.
Yeah, I had a kind of a distant in-law who was flying into the country, who got arrested at LAX and brought here to Nevada because he had like a $3,000 marker he hadn't paid. You know, I mean, this was quite a number of years ago, but I was flabbergasted that they had the power to do that.
The DA takes these things very seriously because, again, looking at the incentives, they get a percentage of every dollar collected on these. Okay. Like I said, our legislature has made the district attorney's office a for-profit collection agency working on behalf of casinos.
But Richard said LAX, that's Los Angeles. That's, what, 400 miles away? Flying in from maybe Manila, I don't know. Why would they...
You're on NCIC.
Yeah, there was a warrant, I guess.
Yeah. Your warrant goes on NCIC.
Yeah.
And you get picked up anywhere in the country, you are taken into custody until they clear that warrant. Oftentimes, they will call the local DA where the warrant is, and it's something minor enough that they will go, no, we're not going to bother to extradite, and they'll release you. If it is something that they desire to extradite on, they will inform the foreign jurisdiction that they will be extraditing, and the foreign jurisdiction will hold, I think, up to 30 days until you get your police officers under that warrant to that state to bring that person back to your state to face charges.
And would $3,000 marker be big enough to justify that?
I wouldn't think so, but apparently it is. And you know what? They can do it for a warrant that was issued over a $50 bad check. There's no downward limit here. The issue becomes, does whatever county it is want to spend the money to send officers to that foreign jurisdiction to bring that person back?
All right. Since this is a gambling show, we just did Chapter 11. We probably should do Chapter 11. We just did Chapter 7, so 7 and 11. And although
oh, I get the connection.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Confusing me.
Of course,
does that have something to do with bankruptcy? Chapter 11.
Yeah, nothing to do with Donald Trump whatsoever. But it has to do with hiring an attorney. Now, to represent you, should you get into trouble in a casino? So, before we go into how a gambler should do this, you're going to be at the top of our list for a lot of listeners to this program. So, first of all, what kind of gambling trouble cases do you absolutely never take?
Cheating.
Cheating.
Yeah, I won't take a cheater.
So, if somebody...
I won't take a cheater.
So, if somebody went out of their way to bring on to cheat. Okay, good. Now, cheating aside, how should a gambler find the right attorney?
You are in a very small subsection of society. The first thing you want to do is figure out if what you need an attorney for is criminal or civil, because that's going to divide your base, all right? For instance, I'm not a criminal attorney. I will do criminal misdemeanor charges such as trespassing or simple batteries or things like that for gamblers, but I am not going to take a felony cheating case, even if they are innocent, to trial, because that's not my bailiwick. And because I don't represent cheaters, by the way, I think I'm now 12-0 on the criminal cases I've taken, which is pretty unheard of. But actually, my rule is I only take innocent people.
Okay. And how can you possibly know that? You can make a judgment, but sometimes innocence is determinable by a jury.
You'd think, except, well, here, I had a case.
Like, O.J. Simpson was legally innocent of killing his wife. That's what innocent means.
No, that's what innocent may mean in a legal sense, but let's look at one that I did take. And historically, and you can go on the internet and find this, and everybody knows who Richard Dougherty is, and it was published in, or at least our listeners, many would know Richard Dougherty. And it was published in the Las Vegas Sun, the trial. The judge was Melanie Tobiasen. Richard was having dinner at Mandalay Bay when he exited the restaurant. He had been found as an advantage gambler, and he was grabbed leaving the restaurant. And at least from many circumstances, it appeared that, well, here. So we went to trial.
Wait, what was he charged with?
I'm going to tell you. He was charged with battery on a security guard named Chris Tovia, who was a gentleman of some size. And for those of you who know Richard Dougherty, Richard is... certainly a handsome man, certainly well-built, but you would not call him brawny in any sense. And Mr. Tovia was probably as broad-shouldered as anybody you have ever seen. I can't even think of an example. He was so big.
Like a football linebacker.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. His biceps, when he folded his arms in front of him, were probably 14 inches across. Not around, across. Okay? Mr. Tovia and another security officer took Mr. Dougherty into custody somewhat, and he was taken into custody somewhat aggressively coming out of the restaurant where he had been to dinner. And then they put handcuffs on him, and then they charged him with battery on Mr. Tovia at the front of the restaurant. Judge Tobiasen would not initially let me show her the video because trials have to go through a certain procedure, But on cross-examination of Mr. Tovia, it became clear that, or on cross-examination, we played the video. Judge Tobiasen watched the video. It was clear in the video that it was Mr. Dougherty that was battered and attacked, at least from a legal perspective, so far as the criminal matter goes, and that he had not battered Mr. Tovia. Judge Tobiasen, even though it was the state's case in chief, which means that they aren't even done presenting their evidence yet, watched that video on cross-examination and said, this case is dismissed. Very strange to dismiss it at that point. But then again, video evidence is functionally incontrovertible. So she throws out the case, and I knew Richard was innocent because I had the videos, okay? So I can take that criminal case. And, which takes you back to the original answer, but where this really gets bizarre is the prosecutor stands up and says, Your Honor, this is our case in chief. This isn't a time where you can dismiss it, or something along those lines. And Judge Tobiasen says, did you watch that video we all just watched? And she said, yes. She goes, would you agree that Mr. Dougherty did not show any physical aggression towards anyone? She goes, I would agree that that seems to be what the video shows, or something like that. And the judge said, well, why are we here again? And here's the Clark County prosecutor speaking to the judge in this circumstance. Your Honor, you have direct evidence from Mr. Tovia. He testified that Mr. Dougherty attacked him. And he described the attack. That is direct evidence. Now, you also have the video, which is direct evidence. It is your choice when the evidence is conflicting as to which is more believable. Mr. Tovia's words or the video. And I would suggest that Mr. Tovia would be more credible in this case and that Mr. Dougherty should be convicted. Yeah, I thank you for recognizing the craziness of that position. But that was the position of the prosecutor.
Well, the judge had to say that, thank you for saying it is my choice. I choose to believe the video.
Actually, the judge sort of said, seriously?
Okay. Did they charge Tovia with perjury?
No, of course not. Yeah. And they did, and nobody was, and Tovia wasn't charged for the battery on Mr. Dougherty either. But there definitely was a physical altercation, so somebody offensively touched somebody else to start the whole thing. And it was Mr. Tovia, I believe, because the video showed him in the criminal matter blocking the door to even prevent Mr. Dougherty from leaving. And like I said, that's reported in the Las Vegas Sun, so you can review it yourself. But so back to the original question, which was,
what should a player
the original question
was, how do you know he's innocent?
Yeah. And I get those all the time. I have had, you know, it's just so easy sometimes you have to believe, sometimes you have to look at the circumstances. One I had was three guys who were they're visiting Las Vegas on a birthday, two young guys and an uncle. And they found themselves just wrecked by some nightclub security. This is interesting. So we did a criminal trial on that one, too, because the nightclub, the DA was continuing to prosecute on the concept of your guys attacked the security guards at the nightclub. When we did the discovery and it came out for trial, I believed my clients. That's how I knew they were innocent, because the story didn't make any sense. A 45-year-old uncle and two young guys who are out celebrating a birthday are not going to willy-nilly go off on a bunch of security guards. And there were like five security guards involved versus these three. You know, nobody's that insane. Well, maybe there are some people who are that insane. But when we did the discovery, and this is so cool, we found out that what happened was the one guy who, the one guy had been approached by the bartender's girlfriend. And there was actual video of this. And they're playing back and forth and having fun at the bar. And there's video of the whole thing. And then they toast and say goodnight. Bartender's not a happy guy. He reports that this guy had actually grabbed the rear end of a totally different girl. Okay? But we got the video. That other girl is two down at the bar and never even got close to him. It was the bartender apparently trying to want to get back at the guy who his girlfriend had sidled up to. So what do you see? You see three innocent guys who get beat up by security because the bartender says, that guy, him, get him.
Okay. Jesus.
Yeah. Fun town, huh? Yeah, I don't mean to say that that derisively because I will tell you that it's the same everywhere.
Okay. All right. Now, we're going to take a brief break for commercials, and then we're going to... Bobner Sessing before the shows said he had an interesting story about the different way juries look at security officers.
Okay.
So we're going to get into that. It's worth sticking around for. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. In July, they're giving away $600,000 in casino-wide progressives. The big progressive starts at $10,000 and must be hit by $25,000. Every player actively playing when the jackpot goes off receives $25 in free play. A second progressive begins at $1,000 and must be hit by $2,500. This is estimated to be hit three times daily. The new semester free video poker classes will begin Wednesday, August 10th and go through early October. This time they're going to be held in the Silverado Lounge, which is immediately in front of Don Vito's Italian restaurant. At the Palms, from now until July 28th, they have drawings every Saturday night, 7:15. Must be present to win. 20 winners share $10,000 each night. Every day between Monday and Friday, you can swipe and receive 20 free drawing tickets. PFP play for prizes. For the rest of the month, you earn cash. Prizes are warned, are redeemed at a rate of 0.2%, up to $190 per day. You keep your points. Every Sunday in July, you earn double points on video poker and 10 times points on reels and video reels. Wednesdays, 500 points earns you a free car wash. Thursday, the same number of points earns you a free Brendan movie ticket. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. They updated the site in June, giving gold members more benefits. If you aren't a gold member, you can sign up for a 7-day free trial. Check it out. All right, Bob Nersessian, you had two similar cases about security guards being a little bit impolite to players. In one case, it went towards for the players, and in one place, it went for the security guards with the juries. Did you make any conclusions about differences in juries?
Well, it's not a jury difference. It's something that, and this was mostly brought up by Thea, my wife, too, who has seen this coming on for some time. We're moving, with everything we're seeing with terrorists and now with Black Lives Matter and police stepping out of line, but then there's support the police and this, that, and the other thing. Everybody has become... And perhaps I'm digressing again, but perhaps it's a product of the ubiquitous cell phone and the videos that are everywhere of everything and the instant news feedback. I think we had videos from inside the nightclub in Orlando within on TV within an hour of when the thing went down and stuff like that. Everybody in our society is becoming, not everybody, but society at large is becoming incredibly safety paranoid. And what they want to see is people in authority positions, police, security guards at casinos, the guy who owns the store that you're standing in, to take an active and invasive position in protecting you, meaning their patrons, everybody in society. And with that, we are now giving liberties to all of these persons. Security guards at casinos, for example. Police with stop and frisk. The United States Supreme Court just recently severely impacted the Fourth Amendment, restricting its ability to apply the exclusionary rule just 2 weeks ago in a decision. We are becoming so safety conscious that we are now at the point of giving away our rights. And people are asking, why would somebody not want a police officer to see their identification or not want to cooperate with a police officer and go down to the station with them or open their trunk or not cooperate with a security officer at a casino who is just taking your money and giving you a receipt and you can figure it out later. And those, there's no reason to complain. And I guess this is just me getting on my horse. This is a dangerous slope that everybody's on. Safety is important, but personal rights and personal liberties are defining of what it means to be an American. And every little bit that is given up, juries are now, every little bit that is given up lessens us as a society and as a people. And I have seen, I believe, a propensity with juries to err on the side of safety and against the personal liberties of those whose personal liberties are invaded. And maybe that's the way we're all going to go. But I'll bemoan it if it happens, and I think it is happening. So I'm just on my horse again, trying to give a little bit of a political opinion.
Kind of related to that, part of the story, the backstory to this, which we're not going to get into a great deal, was there was an audio tape of an Advantage player and a security guard and the altercation. And the Advantage player dropped the F-bomb a few times and otherwise used profanity. And when that was played in front of the jury, that was...
Can you make this more general?
Oh.
That didn't go over well.
Yeah. But, no, the whole point is, yeah, you know, if you find yourself on the south end of something as an Advantage player or anybody dealing with the police, try and keep it as civil. Everything you're doing as civil as you can, because you never know how much they're going to use that against you later on. And... even if you fail, though, and I'm going to cite the Minnesota case that is of such currency at the moment, you may be polite. You may say, "Sir, I am carrying a handgun." You may say, you may respond politely to a request to show your license and registration, and then you still might end up with 3 bullets in your side or 5 bullets in your side as you reach for that registration you were just told to provide. There's no guarantees in life. There's no guarantees here at all. But being polite and being nice and being level-headed certainly has its pluses. Then again, I'm just going to... there are minuses in the litigation area, though, too, because if you fail to show just how pissed off you are, then people may not believe that you were actually outraged. although
it's a fine line.
Yeah. Well, you don't know where it is. I can handle either one of them when they come in. But I know this is an internet radio. Can I swear?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I had a case with a jury verdict, multiple six-figure jury verdict. And the guy was being held in the casino security office. And when Metro walked in and said, "I'm here with Metro," the first word out of the guy's mouth in the security office was, "Fuck you."
Jesus.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That was the Advantage player who said that?
It was the detainee.
The detainee who said that?
He did not happen. This one happened to not be an Advantage player. But that's how angry the casino had made him. And it was not that difficult to be able to show to the jury that's how outraged and outrageous the actions of the casino were. This guy couldn't even deal with a police officer. They took him so far over the edge.
Wow.
I would not have thought saying that would have been a good strategy.
It wasn't a good strategy, but then again, some good lawyers could take that and say, "See how angry he was?"
And we're talking to
a good lawyer. He had lost his mind. He was so angry.
We've been talking to Bob Nersessian. His book is called Law for Gamblers. Your reading assignment is you must go out and get the book and read it before you're allowed to listen to any more of our shows.
If you like it, write a review.
All right. Thank you, Bob Nersessian. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.